afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for waiting. Welcome to the New York State Cessation Center Collaborative. All lines have been placed on listen-only mode, and the floor will be open for your questions following the presentation. Without further ado, it is my pleasure to turn over to your host, Ms. Anne Wendland. Anne, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Erin. Good afternoon. This is Anne Wendland, Cessation Programs Manager for the New York State Department of Health Bureau of Tobacco Control. And on behalf of the New York State Tobacco Cessation Centers and the Smokers Quitline, I would like to welcome you to today's call, the Affordable Care Act, Meaningful Use, and Treating Tobacco Use. You may view today's presentation in two ways, as a webinar or by downloading the slides posted on the New York State Smokers Quitline website. The slides and link to the webinar are posted on the collaborative call page of the New York State Smokers Quitline website, nysmokefree.com. To access today's presentation, go to nysmokefree.com. On the left-hand side of the website's homepage, there's a news feed section. Directly under this heading is an announcement for today's call. Click on the link provided, and it will bring you to another link for today's presentation. If you're having challenges accessing the webinar, you can also go to nysmokefree.com and the link for the presentation, and you should find a link for the webinar, and that will allow you to access the webinar as well. On the same page, under resources, you'll also find a list of the New York State's cessation centers with their respective service areas. Cessation center staff are available to assist your organization with developing and implementing tobacco dependence treatment policies and clinical protocols. Our featured speaker today is Sarah Bodner, Health Systems Change Analyst within the Bureau of Chronic Disease Prevention and Tobacco Control at the New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene. On today's call, Ms. Bodner will discuss how the Affordable Care Act and meaningful use criteria affect tobacco use treatment options. Before we start, I have some housekeeping items. There will be no accreditation for this call. Certificate of attendance are available upon completion of the evaluation. To obtain a certificate of attendance, follow the instructions on the evaluation forms posted on the website. Now it's my pleasure to turn the call over to Sarah Bodner. Ms. Bodner?
Thank you so much for the introduction. And as Anne mentioned, I'm here to talk with you today about two major components of healthcare reform, the Affordable Care Act and Meaningful Use, and the impact of these initiatives on treating tobacco use. And before I get into the actual content, I'd just like to start by emphasizing that this presentation is not influenced by any external relationships or arrangements. So the objectives for today's call. So first, we'll discuss the Affordable Care Act with a focus on how the Act affects access and coverage for cessation treatment. Then we'll transition to the Electronic Health Record Incentive Payment Program Meaningful Use, and how tobacco treatment plays a role in this program. And then finally, I'll provide some tips that can help your practice or healthcare system meet the tobacco screening and cessation measures in meaningful use. But before we get into the content, in my next slide, I'm just going to briefly define acronyms that I'll use throughout my presentation to help ensure listeners know what I'm referring to. Okay, so acronyms. If there was an award for a piece of legislation that creates the most acronyms, the Affordable Care Act would probably win. So the Affordable Care Act is the biggie. People generally call it the ACA, sometimes Obamacare. FPL is the federal poverty level. This is the federal government's official threshold for determining whether an individual or family is in poverty, according to their resources and their family size. The FPL plays an important role in determining eligibility for the health insurance program Medicaid, which you'll see in future slides. EHB is the essential health benefit. This is a package of healthcare services that certain plans have to offer beginning in 2014. MSPs are multi-state plans. This is a type of health plan that will be offered starting in 2014. Co-ops are the consumer-operated and oriented plan program. This is another type of health plan that will be offered in 2014. SHOP is the Small Business Health Options Program. This is a marketplace for small businesses to buy insurance in 2014. USPSTF is the United States Preventive Services Task Force. This is an independent group of national experts that make recommendations regarding clinical preventive services. MU is meaningful use. This is the Electronic Health Record Incentive Payment Program that I'll talk more about later in the presentation. And EHR is electronic health records. And if you're able to, you may find it to be helpful to have this slide close by as a reminder of what these different acronyms stand for throughout the presentation. So now let's move to the ACA part of the presentation. So I wanted to start with a timeline of the ACA that outlines when certain provisions either went or are going into effect. So the ACA was signed into law on March 23, 2010. And now after it was signed, you can see a series of insurance-related changes that pertain to both private and public plans, which I'll discuss in greater detail. And I do want to emphasize that a lot of these insurance changes are building up to the year 2014. 2014 is a big year for the ACA. This is when a lot of these changes that make insurance more accessible to people will go into effect or kick in, and those without insurance will face a penalty, which is called a shared responsibility payment. And when talking about the ACA, I decided to focus on insurance because when you're working with your patients and encouraging them to make important behavioral changes, like quitting smoking, coverage can definitely come up and be a part of the conversation, and it's an important factor as to whether someone is able to quit. So for the following slides on the ACA, in order to keep things interesting, for each new insurance topic, I'm going to read a fact about the ACA. I'll then read another related statement, and you'll have to guess whether it's true or false. I'll then also talk about the impact of each of these changes on cessation. So let's move on to the Medicaid expansion. So here is your ACA fact about Medicaid. The ACA expands Medicaid eligibility, which means adults up to 133% of the FPL, the federal poverty level, will be eligible for Medicaid, regardless of whether they have children. Now, prior to 2014, criteria for Medicaid eligibility varied depending on the state. In most states, childless adults below 133% were ineligible. The ACA attempted to address this by raising the eligibility level, but the decision as to whether or not to expand the program has been left up to the individual states. So that means some states will be expanding their program, others won't be. I recently read that so far about half have decided to expand their Medicaid program. And fortunately, New York is one of the states who will be expanding. So we're going to be expanding our Medicaid program up to 133% of the FPL in 2014. So I just want to emphasize that this particular statement is based on anticipated changes to Medicaid here in New York State. All right, so now that we got through the Medicaid expansion, I'm going to read another statement about the ACA and Medicaid, and you're going to have to guess whether it's true or it's false. So true or false, post-expansion state Medicaid programs will be required to cover cessation medications. True or false? It's true. So per Section 2502 of the ACA, effective January 2014, states that provide prescription drug plans to Medicaid enrollees cannot exclude prescription and over-the-counter tobacco cessation medications. Now, it's still unclear how this requirement will be implemented. For example, we don't know how many meds have to be covered, but at least there's something, some type of requirement for state Medicaid programs to have some sort of cessation medication on their Medicaid formularies. Now, as far as how the Medicaid expansion affects cessation, this expansion extends health care coverage to the low income and uninsured, which is a demographic who are more likely to be tobacco users. So we're getting more tobacco users into the health care system and gaining coverage, which is always a good thing. And here in New York State, the Medicaid expansion will create a group of about 77,000 newly eligibles. And these newly eligibles will now have access to 6 cessation counseling sessions a year, as well as cessation medications. So next, we're going to move on to private insurance and the ACA. So I wanted to begin the discussion with private insurance with the state exchange and the EHB. So here is your ACA fact about the state exchange. So beginning in 2014, small businesses and individuals who don't have insurance can shop for a health plan in an exchange or an insurance marketplace that people can access online. There will be an exchange in every state. And this exchange or marketplace is intended to offer consumers a variety of plans at different price points and with varying coverage levels so people can select a plan that best meets their needs. And low-income individuals who earn more than 133% of the FBL and consequently wouldn't be eligible for Medicaid can still receive financial assistance in the exchange, so insurance is still affordable for them. And certain types of small businesses in the exchange can also receive tax credits. So now that we talked about the exchange and defined what it is, I'm going to read a true-false question about the EHB, or the Essential Health Benefits. So true or false, all plans in the exchange must cover a core package of services called the Essential Health Benefits, or EHB. However, plans outside of the exchange do not have to offer the EHB. So is that true or false? This is false. The EHB is a core set of services that individual and small group plans in the exchange, as well as new plans that are a comparable size outside the exchange, must cover. So this is a requirement that extends to certain plans both in the exchange and outside of it. And now when I say small group, here in New York State, small group is defined as businesses between 2 and 50 employees. They're going to be in the SHOP, the Small Business Health Options Program exchange. Individuals will be in another exchange. In 2016, the definition of small group here in New York State will expand to include up to 100 employees. Now, as far as the EHB and how it was determined here in New York State, so the process for figuring out what the EHB was going to consist of entailed each state picking something called a benchmark plan. This defined the package of services that constitute the EHB. You can think of the benchmark plan as kind of like a guide or a model that insurance companies have to use when they're pulling their benefits package together and they're thinking about how they're going to meet this EHB requirement. The benchmark plan here in New York State is the Oxford EPO provided by United Healthcare. And the benchmark does set a minimum standard for coverage, so plans can always cover more, but it's still unclear as to how exactly they're going to follow the EHB and whether they're going to cover more than what the benchmark plan covers. Okay, so now still on the state exchange and the EHB. So in terms of how this impacts cessation, we're really in the pre-implementation stage with these things. So there are some things we know, and there are some things that we still don't know. So as far as what we know, since lower-income enrollees will receive financial assistance when they're buying insurance through the exchange, this is another way of getting those low-income, uninsured smokers into the healthcare system. We also know that the benchmark plan, the Oxford EPO, does include coverage for tobacco cessation counseling delivered by a primary care provider, so that is something. Now, as far as the unknowns with the state exchange and the EHB, when it comes to cessation medications, it's still unclear if and how cessation medications will be covered through the EHB here in New York State. So CMS, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, and they have been issuing regulations or rules that pertain to the EHB, has required plans that have to offer the EHB to have some sort of procedures in place to allow an enrollee to request and gain access to clinically appropriate drugs that are not covered by his or her plan. But I will say that while this option was in the rule, it's still unclear as to what type of cost-sharing implications a patient will face if they have to access a medication that's not on his or her formulary, as well as what the exact mechanisms will be for doing that. And another unknown area with the state exchange and the EHB is with the different types of plans or products that are going to be offered. So in some states, certain insurance companies have a lot of market share, which means that if you just kind of left it up to what was currently happening in the state, only a couple different types of health plans would be available in its exchange. So in order to support greater consumer choice and variety among plans that are offered through the exchange so people have a variety of things to choose from, there are two unique plan offerings that may provide more options for cessation coverage. Now, this is when the multi-state plans, the MSPs, and the co-ops, the consumer-oriented and operated plans, come in. So the MSPs entail the federal government contracting with private insurers to offer plans in every state exchange. So while these are still private plans, they're also nationwide. This is a very new thing, And so by 2017, an exchange in every state must offer an MSP. Now, because it's so new, we're still unclear as to which state exchanges will have MSPs in the first year of implementation, which again is 2014. We're also not sure what exactly the benefit package will look like exactly. But MSPs may offer different coverage options for cessation. Another exchange dark horse or unknown is the co-op, the consumer-oriented and operated plan. Now, they'll be offered by private non-for-profit groups, and they're going to be directed by the actual customers themselves. They're intended to promote greater competition and high-quality health insurance options. So while we don't know yet exactly what it's going to look like, this type of insurance plan structure, which is also very novel, may encourage greater focus and coverage for prevention like tobacco cessation. So now I just have one more thing to cover with private insurance and the ACA, and that is the USPSTF ratings and tobacco cessation. So again, the USPSTF is the United States Preventive Services Task Force. This is a national expert group that provides recommendations on covered preventive care services. And the ACA requires new private plans of all sizes to cover preventive services that receive an A or B rating from this group. This provision went into effect September 2010, and as far as its impact on cessation, there's some good news and there's some bad news. So the good news is that tobacco cessation interventions received an A rating, so new private plans must cover the service. The bad news is that some plans are meeting this requirement, aren't meeting this requirement in a comprehensive, consistent way. So they may be covering counseling without medication, or they may not be amending their certificate of coverage to reflect this new requirement, so it's a bit confusing to the enrollee as to whether these services are covered. So we really hope in the future that this unevenness will be addressed in future stages of ACA implementation, so private plans will meet this requirement in more consistent ways and really broaden coverage for tobacco cessation. So now I'm going to transition from private insurance and move to Medicare. So here is your ACA fact about Medicare. So the ACA has introduced changes that will make medications, including cessation medications, more affordable for Medicare enrollees. And now the ACA does this by making the Medicare prescription drug coverage, which is known as Part D, more affordable by gradually closing the gap in coverage where beneficiaries must pay the full cost of their prescriptions out of pocket. People call this gap the donut hole. You may have heard that before. So the ACA is doing a great job closing that donut hole. So here's your true or false question relating to Medicare and the ACA. So in order to finance this change that makes medications more affordable to Medicare enrollees, the ACA cuts benefits that were previously provided to Medicare enrollees. So true or false, does the ACA cut Medicare benefits? This is false. The ACA does not cut Medicare benefits. It actually adds one, the annual wellness visit, or AWV. So the AWV is sometimes called the Welcome to Medicare Preventive Visit. This entails a very comprehensive physical and evaluation of medical and family history. It's intended to connect enrollees with relevant preventive care services, including tobacco cessation. So this is a great time to connect your patients with tobacco cessation services. The ACA has also waived cost sharing. When I say cost sharing, I'm talking about things like copays and deductibles for both the AWV and for cessation counseling. And the Medicare program covers 8 cessation counseling sessions a year, along with prescription medications like bupropion and varenicline. So now I am going to wrap up the ACA portion of this talk with a case study. And this case study illustrates the coverage considerations for immigrants, which are a special group to think about. And so I'm just going to read it out loud. So Sebastian is a 25-year-old male patient from Mexico. He's been lawfully present in the United States for 3 years, and this means he's on the pathway to citizenship, or he's been granted permission to remain in the United States, but he is not considered to be a citizen. Sebastian works at a restaurant making $15,000 a year, which puts him under 133% of the FPL. He has no children, and he doesn't have insurance. He also smokes 4 packs a week, and he'd like to quit. So beginning in 2014, what type of health insurance programs would Sebastian be eligible for? What cessation treatment options would be available for him? So as far as coverage is concerned, for Medicaid, there is a 5-year waiting period for most lawfully present immigrants, so Sebastian wouldn't be eligible. However, he could still purchase subsidized health insurance through the exchange. Low-income, lawfully present immigrants can enter the exchange to buy health insurance, and they can also receive financial assistance to help them purchase the health insurance. And this does not have a waiting period. And through his plan, Sebastian would have coverage for cessation counseling with his provider. He may also have coverage for medications, depending upon what's offered in the exchange. And when counseling Sebastian, his provider could refer him to the quit line for free counseling medications and use a prescription drug discount card like the Big Apple RX to help him with his medication costs. So now I'm going to move on to the meaningful use section of the presentation. And I do want to say that this section does not have any true-false questions. It's just standard bullets. So what is meaningful use? Established through the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, meaningful use is a program that allows eligible providers and hospitals to earn incentive payments for meeting particular electronic health record or EHR criteria and objectives. So this is a way to encourage and support providers and hospitals to transition from a paper-based system to one that's electronic. Meaningful use comes in two flavors, Medicare and Medicaid. So for the Medicare meaningful use, the federal government or the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, CMS, runs the program. Participation in the Medicare meaningful use program started in 2011. It goes through 2016. The last year to begin participation is 2014, so it's coming up. And hospitals and providers can participate for up to 5 years. Now, for the Medicaid program, this is run by the state Medicaid agency. People can start as early as 2011. It goes through 2021. The last year to begin participation is 2016, so you have a little bit more time. And hospitals and providers can participate for up to 6 years. And again, this is a program that allows providers and hospitals to earn incentive payments. The incentives are based on when participants enroll, as well as where they're located. In general, under the Medicare Meaningful Use Program, the maximum incentive for providers is $44,000 for over 5 years, while the maximum incentive payment for the Medicaid Meaningful Use Program is about $64,000. So that's over a 6-year time frame. Hospitals can receive $2 million or more dollars annually, but again, this does depend on when you enter the program, if you're meeting all the requirements, and where you're located. So those are just very general amounts. So now I'm going to talk about the structure of meaningful use, how it's organized. It's organized in three stages. Starts out with basic expectations relating to recording and reporting certain data. This is in stage one. And then people gradually move their way up to eventually use EHRs to actually support improved patient outcomes by stage three. So this is kind of the big goal of meaningful use, is using EHRs to improve patient outcomes. And as providers and hospitals move through these stages, they have to meet certain core and menu objectives or measures, as well as clinical quality measures or CQM. Now, your reporting requirements and meaningful use will be primarily affected by two things. The first is what stage you're in. So I'm going to talk about this in later slides, but the reporting requirements will change depending upon which stage. Reporting requirements are also affected by whether you're a hospital or your provider. So while there is overlap between providers and hospitals regarding their reporting requirements, there's also an important difference relating to cessation, which I'm going to address in my next slide. So this slide is specifically on the meaningful use measures and tobacco cessation. This provides a high-level overview of how tobacco cessation is incorporated within the program. So again, there are objectives that hospitals and providers have to report on, and there are clinical quality measures. The objectives are in the left column of the table, and as you can see, smoking status is a core objective for providers and for hospitals. However, when you see the clinical quality measures, which is the right column, while providers can select a clinical quality measure that requires providing tobacco dependence treatment, such as counseling and medication, for hospitals, none directly relate to tobacco cessation. And before I transition to the next slide, I just want to let everyone know that this is based on stage two requirements. So again, the requirements are different for one versus two. I wanted to focus on two because this is what's coming down the pike. Okay, so now we're going to move on to how these measures change throughout the various stages. So first I want to talk about the smoking status measure. So recording smoking status is a core objective for both providers and hospitals, which means everyone has to report on this measure. And so in stage one, the core objective entails that more than 50% of all unique patients who are 13 and older have to have smoking status recorded as structured data. Later, I'm going to talk more about what structured data is and how you can ensure you're recording stuff so it is structured data, but just kind of keep that in mind for now. And then when you move to stage two, this threshold for smoking status increases to more than 80%. So the expectation is there that you're using the EHRs more, getting more comfortable with it, and that you can screen more patients for their smoking status. The final rule hasn't been released yet for stage three, so I cannot speak to that today and how it affects this particular core objective. And at the bottom of the slide, you'll see the different categories within certified electronic health records or EHR. These are all the different ways you could categorize someone's smoking status, and this may vary slightly depending upon the EHR system that you're using. So now I'm going to talk about how the tobacco use screening and cessation intervention measure changes throughout the stages of meaningful use. So this is the clinical quality measure specifically for providers. It entails delivery of a cessation counseling intervention to identify tobacco users. In stage one, this measure is part of a standard set of required clinical quality measures, or CQMs, that all providers have to report on. So now moving to stage two, CMS wanted to give providers more flexibility about which CQMs they reported on, so they could pick measures that best suited the needs of their particular patient populations. So they let providers pick 9 CQMs out of a total list of 64. Tobacco cessation intervention measure is part of that list of 64. So providers could pick it, but they're not required to. However, in order to encourage providers to report on a set of higher priority CQMs, CMS did pull together a set of 9 clinical quality measures that they recommend providers reporting on. So that's why it shifts from required in stage one to recommended in stage two. And we are still waiting for the final rule to be released for stage three. So again, I cannot talk to that today. Okay, so now that I've discussed all the different tobacco-related measures of meaningful use, I wanted to give some tips on how you could meet these measures. And these tips were collected from providers, a self-insured health system, a hospital, and clinical quality specialists here at the New York City Department of Health who work with providers in meeting the meaningful use measures. So this comes straight from the field, people who can offer great insight on how you can be successful with these measures. So my first tip actually goes back to the whole concept of structured data. So be sure to record smoking status in a structured data field, not as freeform text. If smoking status isn't reported as structured data, this documentation will not be captured in the data that you report for meaningful use. And kind of the difference between free-form text and structured data is almost like the difference between putting information in the title or the subject of an email versus the body. So you want to make sure that it's in like an actual field and kind of like what would be like the title of an email rather than a line of text. So it's in there and the system can pick it up. In addition to helping you get credit for actually screening for smoking status, you're going to be inputting data into the EHR that will trigger future alerts relating to the actual delivery of a cessation intervention that a tobacco user would need. So that actually brings me to my next tip, which is about pop-up messages and alerts. So you can also use pop-up messages or clinical decision support systems, CDSSs. CDSS is an automated reminder that prompts a provider to take clinical action based on prior data that was entered into the EHR. So you can use pop-up messages and a CDSS to alert you when smoking status needs to be documented or updated, or a patient has been identified as a smoker but hasn't received a cessation intervention. And then my next tip just really deals more about thinking about how you can utilize all your staff in documenting smoking status and delivering interventions. So how this is actually implemented will really vary depending upon your practice and your system and how it's structured, but it is helpful to think about how all your staff can play a role in this clinical treatment. And so next I'm going to actually talk to you about maybe a way to save time. So in order to save time, could be good to structure your clinical workflow so other staff like nurses, medical assistants can document smoking status and providers can deliver the counseling. Another tip is having an established protocol or policy surrounding the delivery of tobacco dependence treatment. This will really help promote consistency and ensure that you have a system in place for screening smoking status and delivering treatment to identified users. It will also help ensure that all your staff understand what their roles will be in this and so that they can prepare. And then another tip deals with prescribing medications. So a difficulty may be that some providers may not feel comfortable prescribing cessation medications. They might not have done it a lot before. And so something that can really help with this is to offer prescribing guides that include information on dosing, contraindications, and efficacy. And I do have a great new prescribing guide that we're coming out with that I'll highlight at the end of this presentation. And I also do want to just, again, really emphasize how great the New York State Tobacco Cessation Centers can be. They're a great free resource. They can offer excellent on-site technical assistance and support on systems change, counseling, and prescribing medications, and can really help put your practice, your healthcare system, in a great position to be successful with these cessation measures. And so I am going to have one last tip, and this specifically deals with smart forms and order sets and how they can support the delivery of tobacco cessation treatment. And I am going to focus on the EHR vendor eClinical Works with this. I realize that there are many EHR systems out there, but for just sake of time, I had to pick one, so I went with eClinical Works. And so eClinical Works does have a tobacco control smart form, which can help with documenting smoking status, and a smoking cessation order set, which can help with the delivery of the intervention. And they can really help you align with the meaningful use cessation measures. So you can think of an order set as a collection of recommended practices around an intervention. So like all the necessary things you have to do concerning an intervention that are preloaded in one spot. So it's really helpful with facilitating documentation and workflow. And so now I'm going to go through some screenshots of the tobacco control smart form, as well as the smoking cessation order set, specifically in eClinical Works, so you can kind of see what it looks like. Okay. So first we're going to talk about the tobacco control smart form, which is where you can document smoking status. Now, the smart form will allow you to document smoking status in a structured data field, which I had mentioned earlier, so you're able to get credit for doing this work. And in general, EHR vendors are mindful of different workflows, and they incorporate access to different fields in different ways. So in eClinical Works, there are two ways to get to the tobacco control smart form, which is to the right. So you can either go through the clinical decision support system, the CDSS alerts, and select the tobacco control smart form. And I'm sorry I can't point to it, but I've kind of circled it at the bottom. And another way to do it is you can access the progress notes, and then you can select tobacco control in the smart form dropdown. And that image is above the CDSS alerts. Sorry, I said those out of order. Okay, so now that we've talked about how to document smoking status, I'm going to briefly discuss how to use the order set to document the delivery of a cessation intervention. So after a patient has been identified as a current smoker, the smoking cessation order set will appear under the CDSS alerts. You can see that all the way to the left, and I've circled the smoking cessation intervention. So you can click on that, and that's going to bring you to the smoking cessation order set. Order sets can also be accessed directly, which you see in the middle of the screen, or from your progress notes treatment section. And so you can open it up that way. So again, it gives you a couple different options to get to the same spot in your EHR. So now I'm going to show a screenshot of the actual smoking cessation order set. Now, the order set has fields to documentary of medication, which is at the top, counseling, which is in the middle, and then there's an additional smart form in kind of like the lower right-hand corner that you can use to refer a patient to the New York State Quit Line via fax to quit. Now, for billing purposes, it is very important to fill out that counseling section. You'll see that in the middle of your screen, and there's a circle around the fields that correspond with the counseling. So this is the behavioral change smoking 3 to 10 or greater than 10 minutes. And selecting one of these two fields, depending upon how long you counsel the patient for, will ensure that the CPT code that accompanies either of these procedures is directly incorporated within your progress notes, that you get credit for counseling the patient, and that if the patient's insurance plan does cover this type of service, you can bill for it. And the fax to quit form will automatically populate a form, and again, that's the lower right-hand corner, and so you can get an automatically populated form with patient information for the quit line. And depending upon how things are set up, you can either electronically fax or you can print and fax the information to the quit line so the patient can receive additional tobacco cessation support. And once I'm done with my presentation, Pat Bax will speak more about the cessation services that the quit line offers. And I just want to also show you what things look like when you close that order set. So when you close the smoking cessation order set that we were just looking at, progress notes will come up that summarize what happened in that particular clinical encounter, and all the fields that you documented in the order set will get automatically populated in your progress notes. You can just make sure everything is inputted with what you just did with the patient relating to tobacco cessation and for other things as well. Okay, so I'd just like to close with some helpful resources on the ACA and meaningful use that providers and health systems can use to help them learn more about these initiatives and their impact on tobacco use. So these various slides are all ACA resources, and they have a tobacco cessation focus. This slide is resources for meaningful use. The first link has a lot of great resources specifically on meaningful use and tobacco cessation. And these other two links have more general information about meaningful use. And then I also wanted to just provide some contact information for regional extension centers for practices and health systems who are in the process of transitioning from paper to electronic health records. So regional extension centers, or RECs, are federally funded organizations that assist providers with the process in transitioning from a paper-based system to one that's electronic. They also provide support in achieving meaningful use. And I've included information for the REC, or the Regional Extension Center, here in New York City, as one for the one for Long Island and upstate. And I also just wanted to take the time to highlight some really great resources that we have for providers. This is from the New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene. We have the link to our health information bulletin on treating tobacco addiction, as well as a link to other provider tools that we offer, including information about the New York State Medicaid benefit, information about online and in-person cessation trainings that, again, can help you kind of get ready to deliver tobacco cessation in a systematic way, and also a coaching guide on helping patients with their smoking. And last but not least, this is the new prescribing guide that we are working on. This is to help providers prescribe cessation medications for their patients. I did include my email. Feel free to reach out to me if you're interested in the guide, and we'll send it along as soon as it's available. So I'd just like to close by thanking everyone for your time The topics that I discussed today are evolving and complex. So these slides were prepared to the best of my ability and are based on what we currently know about these issues. I hope that you found the presentation to be helpful, and after Pat speaks, I'm happy to answer any questions listeners may have. I'm now going to turn it over to Pat Bax, who is the marketing coordinator at the New York State Quitline.
Thank you so much, Sarah, for your excellent and very informative presentation on, as you said, such a complex and relevant topic. I've had the pleasure to work with you on statewide cessation issues, and you certainly are very knowledgeable about health reform as it relates to cessation coverage. A warm welcome to our new and returning participants joining us today. If you're not familiar with the New York State Smokers Quitline and our services, we're free, we're confidential, we're evidence-based, and we're based at Roswell Park Cancer Institute in Buffalo, New York, actually sunny Buffalo and warm Buffalo today, I'm happy to say. We provide help and resources for everyone in New York State who's looking to quit tobacco use, and also for providers, educators, employers, health plans, anyone who's looking for cessation information. And clients can access our services through a variety of ways. If a tobacco user is seeking help in quitting tobacco use, they can call us directly, they can register online for nicotine replacement therapy, or they can be referred directly through their provider. We do offer free motivational coaching, nicotine replacement patches, a two-week starter kit, motivational support, a wide range of resources, as you can see by our website, an online community, and our messaging service. For providers, as Sarah explained, we do have a referral program, which includes our refer to quit via fax or online, and our opt to quit, our policy-driven systematic program, as well as our downloadable materials located under the Health Provider and Partner section at nysmokefree.com. And our OptiQuit program can help you if you are a hospital in meeting the meaningful use measures. Related to our topic today, I just want to mention that when clients do contact us for services, we do screen for insurance status. And this really is an effort to help clients leverage free services from the Quitline with coverage from their health plan. So at minimum, what we do is we provide clients with a phone number to call their health plan and learn more about the coverage. And in some cases, we do warm transfer clients to a health plan's vendor to provide enhanced services. So health plan organizations can contact us directly if we have anyone listening today who's on the call, if they do have specific cessation coverage information that we can relay to their members. If you're looking for more details about the Quitline services, opt to quit, or if you want to provide us with some information, if you're part of a health plan organization, please call us directly at 1-866-697-8487. And also, please keep the Quitline services in mind when you are planning activities related to World No Tobacco Day on May 31st, the end of the month on Friday. So thank you for participating on our call today and for all your assistance in helping your tobacco-using patients to become and stay tobacco-free. At this time, I'd like to turn it to back to Erin, and we'll open it up for questions.
The floor is now open for questions. If you do have a question, please press the number 7 on your telephone keypad. Questions will be taken in the order they are received. If at any point your question has been answered, you may press 7 again to disable your request. If you're using a speakerphone, we ask that while posing your question, you pick up your handset to provide favorable sound quality. The first question comes from Susan Lennon. Susan?
Hi. Thank you, Sarah. That was a really fantastic presentation. One of the questions I have is when we advise providers to do counseling and, you know, bill for the 3 to 10 minute counseling sessions, I was under the impression that they have to document the time that they began and time that they end the conversation in order to get reimbursed. Is that correct?
So that is a great question, and I'm going to be totally frank, one that I probably wouldn't be the best person to answer that. So I can get your contact information. You can feel free to reach out to me, and I can follow up with you. I have other people here in our unit who really specialize in the details surrounding billing. And I think that probably would be best if they speak to that, because I don't want to mislead you, but I can follow up with you after this. Be happy to do so.
Okay, thank you. Because when we have boxes that we with the eClinical Works with their screens, if that's required, there should be an option for the provider to enter that information so that they can get reimbursed.
Okay.
So thank you.
Sure, sure. I'm sorry I couldn't answer that question.
Okay.
And if you do have a question, please press the number 7 on your telephone keypad. And we do have a question on the line from Saba Gerald. Saba?
Hi. Thank you so much for a great presentation. I had a quick question about regarding back to billing.
Okay.
I have had a few conversations with the tobacco control program here at Memorial Sloan Kettering, and looking at, you know, there, of course, there's the two primary CPT codes for smoking cessation interventions, but also some conversations about billing for the CO breath test as well, the 94250. I'm just kind of trying to get a sense of if this conversation, you know, has been posed by other providers or hospitals, or, you know, basically, essentially, what the conversation been about with regarding the CPT code.
Okay, so are you want to know what the CPT code would be for the COP breath test?
No, I mean, I know what the code is, but more so, has it been something commonly put on the procedural on charge tickets? And
so could you use that to bill, like, relating to tobacco cessation?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. So that is. I'm so sorry. I feel I'm a big disappointment here with the billing, but I do have someone here. He is our medical director here in our unit in the Bureau of Chronic Disease Prevention. He has a lot of expertise on the billing side of things, and I think he can answer your question.
Yes. Hello. My name is Leon. I'm one of the medical directors of in the Tobacco Control Group. The question, to your question, yes, you can definitely bill for CO monitoring of patients. You know, you should check with your plans just to see if they will reimburse you for that and see what the reimbursement, I guess, the structure is, and what's the contract that's been set up, and how much you'll actually get, or how that money might come back to you. But you can bill for it, meaning that you can put in the claim for someone with the ICD code of 9051, a smoker, and if you have the CO2, you know, equipment, CO monitoring equipment, which most people we find actually don't have, but it's something that I feel is very influential. When people see that actual number and see that number go down, it's useful both in the beginning and to help sustain progress as people quit and make quit attempts. So, yes, you could definitely bill for it.
Okay, thank you.
No problem.
The next question comes from Patty Jacobs. Again, if you do have a question, please press 7 on your keypad.
Thank you once again for a thoughtful and insightful presentation. Billing question again. We have a quit smoking program here at Harlem Hospital, and it is definitely ran by your medical director, MD, and we also have a public health educator. We have a CTTS, a certified tobacco specialist, MHS. Are we in CASAC person? Are we not able to submit for reimbursement under these individuals that are counseling? And we do have a COP monitoring.
So this is Seon again. So the CO monitor, yes, because that's a procedure. But the counseling, so for Medicaid, the recognized providers are MDs, nurse practitioner, MDs, DOs, sorry, so any doctor, nurse practitioner, licensed midwife, and PAs under the authority, under the, you know, supervision of MDs. So unfortunately, just because we've had that issue and come up, if the social worker, for example, or the CTTS were to deliver the counseling, you would not be able to bill for that. You know, but if you were saying there's an MD that oversees it, so if the MD was to do it, then he or she can bill for it.
Okay. Thank you.
No problem. Sorry.
press 7 on your telephone keypad.
And sorry, just to reiterate, that was for Medicaid only, those recognized providers. You know, this may change by plan, and there's so many plans that we're not aware of what each intricacy of each plan is.
Could I answer, I wanted to answer one of the questions that I'm seeing someone had submitted via the chat box, and this involves the case study with Sebastian and his premium. The $300 is the annual cost, but that's just the cost that Sebastian has to put in. His plan would really cost more than that, but because it's subsidized and he gets something called a tax credit through the exchange, the credit will cover the rest of the cost, and so he would be responsible for that $300, if that helps.
Want to answer Elizabeth's question?
Sure. I also see a question here via the chat box about participating in the Medicaid Meaningful Use Program. And as far as, you know, I can look into that more, but I think the end date of 2021, that's it. That's when the participation would stop. So that's kind of like your final year to be able to be a part of the program and get some type of incentive payment. So it wouldn't extend beyond it as far as I'm aware.
On your telephone keypad.
Any other questions, Erin?
There are no questions in the queue at this time.
Okay. Thank you. So this is Ann Wendland again. I just wanted to close the call by stating that our next webinar will be on Wednesday, September 11th at 12 p.m. At this time, the call topic has not been selected. On behalf of the New York State Department of Health, Bureau of Tobacco Control, Tobacco Cessation Centers, and the Quit Line, I'd like to express our appreciation for the excellent presentation today and thank you all who participated in today's call. This does bring us to the end of our call, and I hope you have a great rest of your day. Thank you.
That concludes today's teleconference. You may now disconnect.